This is the Breaker.News podcast for February 17th, 2019. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature. I catch up with Dermot Travis from Integrity BC and talk about money laundering and corruption in British Columbia and beyond. And the Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to someone who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or should we give up hope that the NDP government under Premier John Horgan will ever hold a public inquiry into corruption and money laundering? It was not included in the February 12th throne speech, and afterward, Horgan reiterated his preference for short-term investigations by experts rather than a long-term hearing process that would involve a litany of lawyers. Horgan said he is concerned with the connection between casino money laundering, the real estate market, and the illicit drug trade, but he does not want to go the Quebec route and call a public inquiry to satisfy increasing calls for justice. Those calls are coming from city councils in Vancouver and Richmond, and NDP allies like the BC Government and Service Employees Union and Port Coquitlam Mayor Brad West. So why is Horgan reluctant? Is it because Horgan once was a consultant? Decade and a half ago to casino operators in Vancouver before he became an MLA? Is it because his chief of staff, Jeff Meigs, might be called to testify about what he knew and when he knew it while he was a Vision Vancouver city councillor? Horgan denied both questions when I asked him. Then, 2 days later, the NDP government announced that SNC-Lavalin had been shortlisted to bid on the $1.37 billion Patello Bridge replacement project. The same SNC-Lavalin that the BC Liberals gave billions of dollars of contracts to while headlines piled up about SNC-Lavalin's global corruption. That's the same SNC-Lavalin that is hoping to avoid criminal prosecution in Quebec over its corruption in Libya under the Gaddafi regime. It's the same SNC-Lavalin whose ex-CEO recently pleaded guilty to helping a public official commit breach of public trust over the McGill Super Hospital project. So, don't hold your breath for a corruption inquiry in BC. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. A bonus commentary. Is it just me, or was that rather odd that we got a twofer of ex-BC Liberal premiers on February 15th? First, the Daily Telegraph quoted a woman who said that ex-BC Liberal Premier Gordon Campbell had sexually assaulted her in 2013. Campbell is under police investigation for the incident that allegedly took place when he was the High Commissioner to the UK. Campbell divorced from wife Nancy after a 2015 filing in Vancouver Family Court. Meanwhile, Campbell's successor, Christy Clark, went on CTV's Power Play program on February 15th to talk about Jody Wilson-Raybould's resignation from the Trudeau cabinet in the wake of the SNC-Lavalin affair. Clark said that Wilson-Raybould should have reported political interference and resigned. Clark said, quote, "The fact that she didn't report it suggests to me that it probably didn't happen," end quote. Yes, that's Christy Clark, the dyed-in-the-wool federal liberal, the expert at ethics. She's coming to the aid of the party, and she's doubting Wilson-Raybould. She's doubting the victim. Where did her pink shirt go? Even worse than Clark getting a chance to be in front of a camera again on a national TV network was that the host, Beverly Thompson, was so poorly briefed and so ill-informed. Thompson did not pursue Clark about her own SNC-Lavalin connections. In 2011, Clark's leadership campaign and transition team when she became the premier included Gwyn Morgan. Morgan was the chair of SNC-Lavalin when corruption flourished at the Montreal-headquartered company. Morgan donated $284,000 to the BC Liberals over the years. The company scored billions of dollars of contracts, including the Evergreen Line SkyTrain and the John Hart Generating Station BC Hydro Project, under the watch of Christy Clark. Oh. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Lori Chen reports, Chinese tourist stirs anger after child urinates on floor at Forbidden City in Beijing. Photographs of a Chinese tourist letting her infant son pee on the floor of the Forbidden City in Beijing have stirred up anger on Chinese social media as users criticized her behavior. A worker at the tourist attraction told news outlet Beijing Time on Thursday that there were 14 public toilets on the site and that additional temporary ones were added during the peak tourist season over the Lunar New Year holiday. Mainland Chinese tourists have sparked anger in recent years for letting their children urinate in public. In 2014, a video of a couple letting their toddler urinate and defecate on a street in the Mong Kok area of Hong Kong went viral. In 2013, two Chinese tourists were arrested for urinating in Sydney's botanical gardens. About 68,000 toilets have been built or refurbished at tourist sites around the country since 2015. Another 64,000 are expected to be built by next year under a National Culture and Tourism Plan released late last year. In the Bangkok Post, 150 condos in city rooftop dust bust drive. Water is being sprayed from the rooftops of 150 condominium buildings across Bangkok to help mitigate fine dust particles choking the capital. Thailand's Natural Resources and Environment Minister met representatives from nine northern provinces about their efforts to prevent bushfires and combat haze. 150 condominium projects built by LPN Developments PLC joined the effort. The real estate developer has also rolled out anti-dust measures for projects still under construction, including having dust measuring devices installed and spraying water around building sites. In the Japan Times, Japan to recognize indigenous Ainu people for the first time. The Ainu people, many of whom live in northern Hokkaido, have long suffered the effects of a policy of forced assimilation. While discrimination has receded gradually, income and education gaps with the rest of Japan persist. The Ainu population is estimated to be at least 12,300, according to a 2017 survey. But the real figure is unknown, as many have integrated into mainstream society and some have hidden their cultural roots. In 2007, the United Nations General Assembly adopted a declaration on the rights of indigenous people, asking each country to take legislative steps to protect their rights. Japan was among the countries that supported the declaration. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Coast Reporter, Sean Eckford reports, Sea-Watch evacuated, now behind locked gates. The Seashell neighborhood had been on evacuation alert since February 7th after a report from Thurber Engineering, which has been monitoring the area since a new sinkhole appeared on Christmas Day, concluded that the risk of damage to property, injury, or death was too great to allow people to remain in their homes. The district continues to work with Emergency Management BC and structural and geotechnical engineers to see if there's any way the roads can be shored up to allow residents back in temporarily. Public Safety Minister Mike Farnworth said earlier this week that the residents should not expect any other compensation from the province, which is also the position the province took in 2015 when there was a request for disaster financial assistance after one family was forced to abandon its home. In the Oregonian, Maxime Bernstein reports, Lieutenant removed from rapid response team as Portland police investigate his texts with Patriot Prayers Joey Gibson. Portland Police Lieutenant Jeff Naya has been removed from the rapid response team and barred from communicating with any protest organizers as the Bureau investigates his frequent text messages and emails with Joey Gibson, the leader of the right-wing Patriot Prayer group. Many of the rallies and demonstrations turned violent as Gibson and his supporters clashed with counter-protesters, often led by self-described anti-fascist demonstrators, or Antifa, dressed in black with their faces covered. Quote, "It is imperative that we come together to hear people's concerns and ideas," Police Chief Danielle Outlaw said February 15th in a statement as the Bureau announced restrictions to Nia's assignment. Quote, 2019 is a year for solutions. We would like for the public to have the opportunity to share with the Portland Police Bureau their ideas for how to move forward. End quote. In other news, the name of Portland's police chief is Outlaw. And we reported on these headlines this week in the Breaker.News. BC Liberal MLA Ellis Ross's partisan rants costing taxpayers, but clerk's office turns a blind eye. Throne speech disaster highlights BC Liberal waste and secrecy and NDP lethargy. How the Christy Clark regime hired two familiar faces to help create the clone speech in 2017, and why the NDP was in no hurry to find the related documents in 2018. And fact-checking as the suspended legislature duo responds to the Plekis report. Read all about Craig James and Gary Lenz's errors of omission and commission, and the various discrepancies in their statements. Find those stories and more behind the headlines in the Breaker.News. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Jody Wilson-Raybould quit the Trudeau cabinet as the SNC-Lavalin scandal in the Prime Minister's office continued to unravel. The calls for a public inquiry into money laundering in BC increased. The legislature returned under the cloud of the RCMP investigation of the suspended clerk and sergeant-at-arms. An interesting week indeed in BC, and a lot to talk about with Dermot Travis of Integrity BC, this week's guest. First, the throne speech, the blueprint for the new legislative session. It mentioned the controversy over money laundering and the connections to casinos, real estate, and the drug trade. But it offered no hope that there will ever be a public inquiry.
Again, you've covered enough public inquiries to know that they are long, they are costly, and oftentimes don't lead to a result. We want to see consequences for this action, and I believe we're on the right track for that. If we find in Mr. German and Ms. Maloney's reports that there's more work to be done and the public inquiry will help us with that, I have zero problem with going in that direction, nor does the Attorney General.
Premier John Horgan is not willing to go in that direction yet. Is he dragging his feet?
Speeches on the phone are more often than not now public relations exercises and feel-good legislative initiatives. Proof's always going to be in the pudding. And as you touched on, the proof is always going to be in what's left out. And while he did touch in the speech on the throne on the issue of trust and the money laundering question, when you're looking at a province that nearly 80% of citizens want a public inquiry into money laundering, and the Premier still will not accept that verdict, which comes from supporters of all the parties, I think he's extremely tone deaf on the issue, and he is going to have to recognize that some of the answers that both the government, regardless of who's in power, and the public want, will only be found out through a public inquiry.
And this is also with the backdrop of the BC legislature scandal. We found out November 20th when Craig James, the clerk, and Gary Lenz, the sergeant-at-arms, were both suspended with immediacy by the legislature, that there was an RCMP investigation, two special prosecutors. Since then, we've had the Darrell Plekis report explaining some of the reasons why he called in the RCMP. The Legislative Assembly Management Committee meets this week in Victoria to decide next steps. That was referred to in the throne speech right near the climax, talking about new transparency and accountability measures. But again, we don't have details on when those will be introduced and what those will look like.
Well, I think that one of the things LAMC, the Legislative Assembly Management Committee, is going to have to really get their head around is the last time we left this process, there was a belief that the system would include the system in terms of trying to address all of the issues that have arisen from this, an out-of-province auditor general to review the operations of the Legislative Assembly. Now, some people believe that they had meant a forensic audit. In the meantime, BC's auditor general, Carol Bellringer, has kicked up a bit of a storm about being excluded from this process and announced her own audit into the Legislative Assembly. I think one of the things that Lambsey will have to do is straighten that out so it is very clear to the public. I also think it is a mistake for Carol Bellringer to be involved in this particular process and audit. Not for anything that she has done in the past that would suggest some type of partisanship or some type of potential possibility of trying to sweep something under the carpet. Rather, this is going to be a report at the end of the day that the public must feel that all of the issues at the Legislative Assembly have been reviewed, investigated, and dealt with properly. If that person conducting that process comes from out of province and has no vested interest, as far as the public can see, in the outcome, we're going to have a better product at the end of the day. And I think it's why Ms. Bellringer, who has a number of activities and a number of projects underway already, should gracefully step aside and allow Lambsey to decide what is best. And as far as I'm concerned, what is best would be an outside Auditor General coming in.
And this has also been a week where it started with the resignation of Jody Wilson-Raybould from Cabinet, the continuation of the SNC-Lavalin scandal in the Prime Minister's office. It's also a week where, near the end, we get the shortlist for the $1.37 billion Patella Bridge that connects New Westminster and Surrey, and we find out that one of the three bid teams includes SNC-Lavalin, that while SNC-Lavalin is facing criminal prosecution in Quebec, our government here in British Columbia seems to still be open to the concept of doing business, more business with SNC-Lavalin than it already does. This seems to be a bit of a conflict.
There is a problem in the tendering process towards public infrastructure projects in this province. And the problem is easily illustrated when you see the same companies coming up time and time again in the bidding stage and in the preferred proponent stage. And that smacks, quite frankly, of almost territorial interest. This province is sort of seen potentially by competitors in the construction industry as being someone else's turf. There's no point in bidding. Why do we even want to go there? So let's go bid somewhere else. That's not the image BC wants. It's not the process that we should have in place that would allow someone to believe that. Now, you know, we ran into the same problem with Site C and Petrowest. We're now about to do this potentially again. There is no guarantee today that the SNC-Lavalin that the BC government negotiated with will still exist in 6 months' time. And that should be the first concern of whether or not SNC should have been allowed to get this far in the process. The second concern is when you see Kiewit showing up again. Kiewit shows up too many times on public infrastructure projects. They continuously overshoot their budgets. And in some cases, Sea to Sky Highway being one, there have been some structural issues with that project that Kiewit undertook. And when you see the Minister of Transportation release a review into the Portman Bridge that was only, I shouldn't say released, the only way you obtained it was through an access to information request, it suggests to me that there are things that the government in particular just don't want the public to know about how infrastructure projects are undertaken in BC. And we see continuous cost overruns, delayed projects, and we keep using the same players. And when you look at Professor Flyberg, I hope I got the pronunciation correctly, at Oxford University, he talks about a report card. Contractors should have a report card to see, to show clients how they performed on previous projects, so that a government, regardless of whether it's BC government or the federal government, will be able to say, no, I'm sorry, you know, your report card says you're at D level, and we're only accepting companies for bids from B-plus up level. So, you know, if we continually reward bad behavior, which is what this is doing, we'll always end up with bad behavior on these projects.
This is the virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Sam Taylor, who gave Muggsy, a Maltese Japanese Spitz puppy, a new home in Burnaby, BC. Muggsy's face was badly disfigured by an acid attack in Iran. Taylor brought the dog to Canada, discovered the dog's inner beauty, and found a veterinary surgeon to help Muggsy recover. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find out more at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for February 17th, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on February 17th in 1968, the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame opened in Springfield, Massachusetts? It's named after Canadian James Naismith, the inventor of basketball. Steve Nash of Victoria was inducted in the class of 2018. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.